At its core, Insight Myanmar is about connection. We strive to bridge divides and foster understanding by sharing the stories of those living through extraordinary times. Connection fuels empathy, and empathy inspires action. So whether it's through tales of spirituality, reflections on cultural heritage, or accounts of people's struggles against oppression and their aspirations for a better future, we aim to forge connections towards a shared humanity that transcends borders. Let's start to build on that connection with the interview that follows. Professor Chayan, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Insight Myanmar podcast.
Good morning.
You have been such a loyal and strong advocate to Burmese students, professors, PhD candidates, many others in Myanmar, the neighboring country, of course, to Thailand. And it's such a pleasure and a privilege to talk to you. We've been trying to have this conversation for some time. So I'd like to begin with asking about when your engagement with Myanmar began and why it has been so important for you to advocate for the freedom and safety and study of so many Burmese academics and students over the years.
I just want to show you the sort of the philosophy of RCSD, the small organization which I am directing. RCSD has this mandate to provide critical study of social and environmental transformation in mainland Southeast Asia. And I would say that it's particularly we were interested in Myanmar because of the social and environmental transformation. We work with civil society and communities, and we start with this project called Understanding Myanmar's Development since 2011 by organizing workshop for journalists, activists, and researchers in Myanmar to work on different topics during that time. That was before 2021. And in 2015, we start to work with the University of Mandalay to train or to build capacity of the faculty members there. And these are their products. These are the project that they work on, like on the land grabbing in Mandalay, about the education for nuns, those small girls who become nuns, they are from northern Burma, from the Ang area. The issue of tradition and modernity in the Ang tea cultivation, for example. These are the monographs that we support. We support the researchers from Myanmar, particularly from the Mandalay University, and also help them to present papers in our conference. So we organized the first international Myanmar Myanmar conference in 2015 at Chiang Mai University. And 2 years after that, 2017 in Myanmar at the University of Mandalay. Right? And we still work with them until the 2021 coup d'etat happened. The third conference was organized in Chiang Mai at the time. So many people canceled their participation because they were afraid of attending our conference. But we still organize it online. Many of them attend our conference online. And so besides this kind of activities of training, we also provide opportunity for Myanmar students to attend our graduate program, finding some scholarship for them, and encourage them to participate in the international conference, not only in Chiang Mai with us, but as if possible, attend conference in maybe Australia or in the US, for example. Aside from this, we also have the what we call the Scholar at Risk program, providing fellowship, 10 fellowship each year for Myanmar journalists, artists, researchers from civil society organization, etc., etc. So these fellows, most of them are in Mysore or Chiang Mai or Bangkok, but some of them are inside Myanmar. So we provide sort of sometimes online training or on-site training to improve their research capacities. And we also encourage them to publish, like in this case, you can see this is a product of the conference last time, but also include some papers written by our fellows there. So we made RCSD as a space where students, activists, journalists, researchers from Myanmar can interact and learn more about their situation. They can collect data on the ground, and we provide some kind of concept and methodology so that they can produce a decent report like that. But what we learned from this experience that there's a kind of a dialogue among these fellows and our students, our faculty members, and other Thai activists. So this is what we have been doing. And particularly, we have this project. You can, I show you this project called the Inclusive Burma. I think what RCSD, particularly myself, see the situation in Myanmar, in the situation we call interregnum, the old regime is still there, but the new body, the new government has not emerged yet. People are looking for these opportunities. Right? So, to us, we see the emphasis upon what we call the ethnic essentialism. So you have Karen, Kareni, Shan, Taang, contesting sometimes, not only with the Tatpador, but contesting among each other. So what we see is that a need for a political imagination on inclusive Myanmar. They need, this is not my job, but the people in Myanmar have to think about this. What is their common national values that should arrive at? So we have this small project to work with. At first, we start with Mons National College. The second year, we work with the Kareni IEC, work with some of the young people to train them to do research. And this year, we just finished a project. But this time, we recruited young ethnic from different ethnic groups to attend this workshop. So we would like to see them share their problem, share their vision, and understanding how to use research methodology to understand the local situation, local knowledge, like that. So this one, we work on three main issues, on federal democracy, resource governance, and education. Right? So, and we hope that this project would help training young people to understand how to do research and use knowledge in order to build inclusive society in Myanmar.
And you have really made it a priority in your position to want to lend a hand and to support those Burmese activists, professors, students, candidates, etc. This is at a time when safety has eroded in their country, and
yes,
many are coming to Thailand. And the issue of how many Burmese are fleeing to Thailand has itself become a domestic issue here in its own kind of challenge. And so within that context, why has it been so important to you and such a priority in your position, at your department, in your university, to be an ally during a time like this?
Well, because of our position, the Chiang Mai University is located in the sort of near the border, near Myanmar, near Laos. So we thought that as an academic institution, we should do something when there is a problem in our neighbor, right? And in fact, this is an economic issue as well. We also understand that Thailand is facing the problem of aging society. So there is also a need for labor from Myanmar or neighboring country to work in Thailand in different sectors. So in the agriculture sector, service sector, industrial sector. This is one issue that we realize the importance of the need for labor from Myanmar. But at the same time, we also see these young people who have to flee their country after the coup. But these people do not, they are trapped here in Thailand or in Mersot, for example. Cannot go back and cannot even travel out of Mersot if they don't have a yellow card or pink card, I'm sorry. But these people are, particularly young people, they would be the lost generation without any further education. Right? That's why we try to work with them, organize different types of workshop. And in particularly in Mersot, we also work with the former university professors who are CDMers there and encourage them to run a program called Streetwise Program to help young people who fled from Myanmar and also help them to organize workshop for these youth from Myanmar. If we do not work with these young people, who will be the future of Myanmar, right? Then what would happen in our neighboring country? We hope that these young people, if they receive education, they can develop their own country. So if Myanmar is doing well, that's good for Thailand as well. Right? If this generation do not have a further education, they cannot catch up with the change and development in the world. So when they return to Myanmar, they cannot become a human resource to help Myanmar develop their own country. So this the way I see this is to, in fact, it's for the interest of the region, not only Thailand, for Myanmar, for Thailand, and other countries around here.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very self-interested but enlightened view, which should be self-evident, but is not to many looking at domestic policy. There can be a frustration in Thailand among some Thais that the Myanmar people are causing us this problem, and we just need to tighten our own restrictions, but do nothing to help them with that problem, not understanding that, you know, there, I mean, just recently there were reports of conflict that was in the Myanmar side that was moving into Thai soil, to say nothing of disease, to say nothing of you know, the scam centers, or so many issues that are concerning to Thailand. And so, you know, it can be a bit confusing, although it's certainly not isolated to Thailand. We see this with migration and conflict all around the world. But it can be confusing sometimes that one would not see it's in your self-interest to work with the root of the problem. Myanmar is not going anywhere. The border is not going to change anytime soon. And so to, instead of trying to restrict further, to look at dealing with the root of the problem, to have a stable and peaceful country next door, is obviously going to be better for Thailand in the long run. Why do you think it is that some in Thailand have not seen it that way or not tried to work that way?
Yes, I think there is a we also have to understand the Thai political situation too, right? You have the party, which is now the People's Party, right? They are the opposition party, but not now, but previously. So they have taken a position of not conservative, but more nationalistic approach, right? So they saw that migrants in mass sorts are increasing in number and fill up some vacancies in the Thai job markets, right? But if you look at another end, you also see that Thailand also needs labor to fill up in different sectors in the world. But this ultra-nationalist group, seeing the coming of migrant labor from Myanmar or these CDMers in mass sort as a threat to the to the Thai economy, for example, despite the fact that Thailand also need labor because of the aging society, right? But this kind of ultra-nationalist sentiment that they use this kind of ideology, this kind of attitude to raise nationalism during this kind of political campaign. And as we can see, not only in the case of Myanmar, but the eastern border with Cambodia. There are some group of people who have very much become more nationalist, right? So that's why they let the Cambodian workers return to their country in the last 2 months, almost probably about 1 million going back. Now you may have seen or heard or learned from the news that they recruit migrant laborers from Myanmar to work in the sugarcane fields, to work in other kinds of agricultural activities in the eastern part of the country. Right? So you have, on the one hand, this ultra nationalist wing who are against foreigners, right? Use this as a political interest. But on the other hand, in reality, Thailand also needs migrant labor from Myanmar. But in the case of Mesot, it's a special area. There are CDMers and students and politicians, business people who left the country, left Myanmar after 2021, congregated living in Mesot. I think the growing number and their activities there may have hosting people in Mesot may feel that now Mesot has changed a lot. You can see that there are several more Burmese restaurants there, more hardware companies in Mesot, more civil NGO working there, and students. So these people are from Mesot, but they are not allowed to travel outside. So there are increasing activities in Mesot. So it is possible that the host family or the people in Mesot feel a bit uncomfortable. I also heard about some discrimination. Like, for example, students who would like to rent room or house, they are not allowed by the Thai host, the Thai family, like that. So there's some tension there as well. I do not know whether those who are from Myanmar, maybe CDMers, politicians, student activists, whether they have any kind of activities that allow the Thai people in Mesot or in Dak province to understand their situation. I have seen that there are many, I have learned that there are many activities organized among this organization from Myanmar, but not including the local population. So that is, I think there's a tension there that we should do something to do that.
Yeah, and that's where your initiatives have really tried to bridge that. You've really worked on these people-to-people connections that you've tried to foster. And, you know, you've referenced on the Thai side a number of the discomfort or some of the nationalist sentiment or rhetoric that comes. On the Burmese side, I've referenced several times that we did an interview with the language teacher, professor, and poet Kenneth Wong when he came to visit Thailand. And he spoke about the persecution and the difficulties that Burmese have, but he was also very open and critical that he felt the Burmese population there, that they should be making more of an effort to learn Thai language, that would be helpful. Yeah. Of course, you know, with the added understanding that learning the language is not easy work, and when you're facing the kind of trauma and difficult situations that they're in, it's not such a normal undertaking to go to language acquisition, but that there can be more done on the Burmese side, even with the challenges that they're undergoing to learn how to adapt and integrate into their host country. And so, you know, I want to prompt you to talk about why you have felt that these people-to-people connections have been so important, not, you know, Naypyidaw to Bangkok, but really looking at the individual connections and relations with each other, what you have done to help foster that people-to-people understanding and what you've seen as a result of that.
I think we have not done enough in terms of bringing Thai people and people from Myanmar to understand each other. Most of the time, maybe because of the urgent issue facing by the Myanmar migrants, so we devote more time to work with them without informing, without including, without encouraging Thai people to work together. This is a good, another example is here now. We have the graduate program and undergraduate program, international graduate program. At the beginning, we receive or we recruit students from the region. But without the international support, we cannot provide scholarship for those from Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos to come, or beyond Southeast Asia to come, like Indonesia. So because of the need for further education, we take in students from Myanmar. So in our undergraduate and our graduate program, we have almost 80% of Myanmar students. So we are concerned about this, that our program, international program, will become Burma program or Burmese program. This is what it's a challenge for us to retain this kind of international combination of students so that they can learn each other. That's what our problem is now. And second, we also need to work with civil society in Myanmar to develop program that allow Thai people to attend. We will have to work more with the Chamber of Commerce in Myanmar, in Bangkok, to understand their problems and how to work with the migrant from Myanmar and allow the local communities to understand that the need for labor, the need for manpower is important in Myanmar, in Thailand in general, right? I think we have to explain to the Thai people, particularly through the Chamber of Commerce, that Thailand also needs labor from Myanmar, and we need to work together in this case, right? So to answer this question, we have not done enough to bring Thai and Myanmar together to understand the people.
In your position, you've done so much to support Burmese academics, as you mentioned in your graduate program, 80% Burmese that are there. And we started this conversation out with you sharing the publications, books, papers, conferences that have focused on the priority of Burmese undertaking their own research. And so I'd like to ask you about the role of academia at a time like this. There could be some who look at the situation in Myanmar and say, well, there's not really the luxury right now to engage in academic work. This is a collapsed society, the economy, the conflict, the migrants, everything else. Where academia fits into it, this is perhaps not the time in the society that's not stable. And yet, certainly, I think from your viewpoint and from those, from many others, at a time like this, academics and not just academics, but Burmese doing academic work about their own country rather than outsiders doing that work, it has never been more important than now to do, and that's much of what your program has done. And so I'd like to ask you if you could share why you feel at a time like this, doing academic work is so important and important for Burmese themselves to be doing rather than outsiders, and also some of the risks and challenges involved in doing that work?
I think it's this time as academical in the interregnum. So we have to use this opportunity, or we must use this opportunity to learn more about our own problem, our own situation, and what are the obstacles that prevent Myanmar people to overcome their problems. And more importantly, it's how to develop young, what I would call organic intellectual, who can use their knowledge to work with local people and at the same time learn from the local people about their situation, about their aspiration. What I'm trying to do is to build this kind of pardon me if I use the academic jargon, war opposition, right? To build knowledge, but build knowledge from below. What I'm trying to say is that we are looking for a decolonizing methodology, building knowledge from below by this Burmese or Myanmar intellectual, so that they can use this knowledge to understand and help to build their own country in the future. At the end, they need to build this knowledge in order to provide what we call the counter-hegemonic knowledge, that they can use it in contesting with the incumbent authoritarian state. Without a collective, counter-hegemonic ideology, the people cannot come together and to look for their future. So this is what I think it's my own ways of looking at the how we can help our friends and colleagues, young people in Myanmar, to do.
And what are some of the challenges and security risks that these Burmese academics face in just simply doing their work?
Well, we have to be careful in doing this. That's why in our publication here, we call ethnographic tries under fire. So this mature and also young intellectual, young researchers are facing this kind of problem. So we allow them, or we invite them to contribute their papers in this collected volume, but using pseudonyms for that. So we that's what we can do. Right? We are aware of the situation that they are facing. So of course, we have to try to make use of our activities, using the university as a safe space for them. But beyond that, we cannot do. Like, for example, the situation in Mesot. They are harassed by the police, or there are some anti-Burmese sentiment there. We are here a bit far. We cannot do anything except inviting some of them to present their papers in here at CBU, more safe in other places.
And I imagine just merely the normal academic procedures of doing field work where you are able to analyze data, speak to informants, even as you just mentioned, being able to say, to come in person in an academic department and say, this is my name, this is my paper, and I'm presenting it. Even that very act may be something that you have to look a little more closely at the safety considerations. So there must be a lot of very normal academic procedures that all fall under a certain type of scrutiny in this case.
We have to be careful too. We have to, at the same time, this is the area which we have not paid much attention. In other words, how to protect our students, our fellows from possible threat to their safety. We have not done enough on that.
I was really interested earlier in the discussion when you said that the work that these Burmese academics are doing are not just important for their society, and the people-to-people relations are not just important for issues of Burmese safety, but they are also offering so much to Thailand as they're talking with milk tea activists or other academics or other parts of governance structures or marginalized communities, the knowledge that they're bringing in is valuable. And why I think this is so important is that it's very crucial that we not look at a people going through conflict, in this case, the Burmese, as victims, as people without agency, as people that are deserving pity and one-way traffic and helping. And this is pointing at this reciprocal relationship that you're not just in a position of giving and giving and giving to a poor people, but that it's a reciprocal relationship of you're certainly giving something and you're supporting in some ways, but their presence, in addition to just the youth being able to be involved in certain jobs and work that Thailand needs, that the information, the higher level orders of information, knowledge creation, content that they're sharing, this is something that could be valuable to Thai society on all levels. And so I'd like to prompt you to share a bit more about the advantages of Burmese ways of thought that are coming into Thailand and the positive influences that could have, or perhaps you've already seen.
I think we are modestly investing for the future. I don't think we can expect that our involvement in training, engaging with Burmese young people, student activists and intellectuals can bring the results immediately. Right? But in the long-run future, we hope that we have a chance to work with a group of people of this generation so that they can more or less get out of their sort of hegemonic ideology coming from the States. And they can learn new approach to understand their own people, trying to find ways to bring people to build inclusive society. That's what we hope to do that. So that is in the future. But what we have not done is to bring this group of this generation of Burmese student and intellectual to interact with Thai people. There are some, like through our project called Burma Concern. That's what we have been doing for a long time. But this Burma Concern project now is run by my former students, being Thai and Burmese to work together. But they are not working on knowledge production. They just interact to learn from each other. But in our case, it's focused on knowledge production, which is an investment for the future.
And have you seen ways that Burmese academics in talking about anything from marginalized populations to climate change to scam centers to aspirations of federal democracy, any of these concepts have you, and of course the nature of living under an authoritarian state itself, have you seen examples where their work in Myanmar specifically has come to be relevant to Thai activists and people in Thai government and journalists, academics in Thailand in ways that they've gained from this knowledge creation to be applied and then used in Thailand itself?
There are so many activities organized by these groups. There may be some interaction. Like, for example, in Mysore, there is a network called Responsive. Is it Myanmar Responsive or Responsive Myanmar? There's a network of NGO in Mysore to interact with these Burmese or Myanmar students, activists, CDMers, and bring some Thai academic to work together. But it's still not as, I would say the interaction between Thai and Myanmar has not been at the level that we expect for that, right? Not yet. But of course, in our workshop in Mysore, we also invite, for example, the current Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Sihasak, to attend our last workshop. And the last workshop, the second one, which I did not attend, we also invited middle-ranked Thai officials from the Ministry of Interior to explain about the Thai policy on rights to work of the refugees. So there are some, we create this kind of platform where some key personnel from the government, from NGO, to work, to understand, to interact with activists, journalists, and fellows from Myanmar on current issue with regard to people from Myanmar.
That's tremendous, and I remember hearing about that at the time, and I really just want to underscore how remarkable that is, because it's indicating that you're not doing something away from or in opposition or contrast to Thai authorities, but you're very much showing how the work that you're doing is you want them involved, you want them in the conversation. As you put that on, what did you learn about their involvement and their interaction? Did you see examples of effective communication, or did they walk away with different levels of understanding based on that?
Well, I think it's you may not remember that I work on the issue of repatriation of the refugee from Myanmar since 2015, I work on a project for the Thailand Human Rights Commission. So it has been our effort to involve this kind of organization, including the national security officers, to understand the situation in Mysore. Right? But it takes a long time. 2015, before they come up with this new policy on rights to work, it's 10 years. But more and more we need to interact with those who are in Thai in those mid-level of Thai official who are working on policy with regard to Myanmar. Myanmar migrants or student or CDM was in Mysore and in Chiang Mai in Bangkok. We have to work with that. At the same time, facilitate NGO working on Myanmar, Thai NGO or international NGO to bring them together to understand. For example, 2 weeks ago, we co-organized a workshop on Tamarakita, together with the ICRC, you know, inviting Buddhist monk from Myanmar, from Thailand, chaplain from Thai military, and NGO from civil society from Myanmar to discuss about Tamarakita, the concept that used by Buddhists to more or less a code of conduct of Thai, of the Buddhists. Either they are soldiers or doctors or nurses, how to deal with, how to use metta, empathy towards those who are suffering, whether they are your friends or your enemy. You should follow this conduct. So Al-Sisi always tried to facilitate this kind of dialogue and interaction between Thai and people from Myanmar as much as possible. Right?
Well, that sounds incredibly powerful. And that prompts me to think of and ask you about these incredible conferences and seminars and workshops you've had. This is, we've talked a lot about the ways that you've supported the graduate program and Burmese academics, people-to-people interactions, connecting with Thai authorities. The thing we haven't mentioned yet is how incredibly active, under your leadership, RCSD has been in all of these conferences being organized. And, you know, certainly many conferences on Burma and Burma studies, but looking at ethnics, decolonizing Southeast Asian studies, Chinese relations with the region, wider Southeast Asian connections and sharing, looking at the way that ethnic and marginalized communities have been studied in Southeast Asia. I'm just rattling off, you know, a few of them that I've been fortunate enough to attend and to be involved with. But, you know, your department has just been so active in being a hub for this really dynamic information sharing of key concepts that, you know, for too long have just not been able to have the kind of conversations we're seeing now.
We believe in dialogues among people of different backgrounds. Right? And we see the opportunity that the university can provide this space for dialogue, for learning from each other, respect each other, right? And at the same time, we also would like to retain our position as an academic institute in producing decent, respected knowledge body that can be used by international students, Thai people, Myanmar NGO, or international NGO. Right? We see ourselves as a kind of the pollinator, the one who can bring people together to exchange ideas. But at the same time, there is a kind of a certain expectation that is how to build a new generation of Burmese intellectual that can work on their own country to get out of this kind of interregnum, so to speak. Young people, these intellectuals need to think about. Of course, I understand that they want to, some people use the term revolution, but toward which end that they want to go.
What are you building?
Yes. Democratic society? How about economics? Is still this kind of neoliberal ceasefire capitalism or more sustainable development end, for example? So these need to be discussed. I cannot tell them what to do, but they have to That's why we provide space for them to talk and methodology for them to learn.
And I think the brilliant and really helpful thing about that as well is that we have to remember that the military has long gone after students. This is nothing new. I mean, before the military, the British colonials went after students as well. Students has, in Burma especially, students in university life has always been on the forefront of pushing for new ideas and for new freedoms from authoritarian structures. And so in that space, in the military for decades, having attacked and dismantled educational systems and replaced it with propagandized teachings instead, it's never been more essential to be able to keep that kind of intellectual life and rigor going. And I think that, you know, having there are various Burma studies programs we find around the world and Western countries that also support. But as you say, the proximity, Chiang Mai and Mesat, the proximity allows for a different level of interaction that is not so removed of half a world away and trying to do studies, but to be in relative safety while also able to engage in a conflict not so far away and really feel like you're not abandoning your country, but with your academic freedom, you're able to apply your gifts to look, as you say, what future do you want to build? Not just what do you want to take down and win a battle right in front of you, but then what happens the day after? What are you trying to build up?
That's exactly. I understand that these young people want to have a change. They want to have a revolution, but in what direction? What happened after that? And that's need knowledge. Need a lot of thinking, need a lot of information, and need a lot of participation from local people. Right? I think in the case of other countries and also in Thailand, during the 1780s, there was a kind of a political party that gives some kind of direction or ideological direction. I'm not sure whether in Burma they have that kind of a party or a group of intellectuals that can lead the society. I don't know. There are lots of people who are working in Myanmar. Those, they are looking for a solution, but have not, for me, I have not seen an attempt to look for a kind of a collective at the societal level, the values that can be used as a kind of a guiding ideology or principle at this moment.
And I think what's so essential here is that this work has to be done before the last battle has been won. You can't simply have the day after the military collapses and say, okay, now let's decide what we want to build. This takes a lot of time.
That's true. That's true. Very much true. But you need also have to have a clear effort to do this, right? In the last conference, one of the themes is called assemblage, right? What does it mean? It's a network of people, of different ideas, that's very fluid. But what I'm thinking is that it's not only assemblage, but a more sort of organized effort to look for this kind of a core values that can lead the movement. That's what I think, if I can explain to you, this is what I see. And this is what we are trying to do.
And I think that's really important because we saw what happened with the last NLD administration. Certainly, there were many challenges with not having full control, and it was certainly more positive for many people than we saw in the previous military administration. But we also saw the land grabs, the continued marginalization of ethnic communities. We did not necessarily see an encouragement of democratic thinking and civil society structures, but it was still very much centered on a powerful leader that would make decisions, in this case by herself, and have people fall underneath. And so, as one looks and as the Burmese look to what kind of future they want with the hope of the military collapsing in some form, that question does come as to where does transitional justice fit in? You know, where do resources fit in? Where do these different marginalized communities, where do they have their rights that come in? And that is not something you figure out overnight. It's not something that a charismatic intellectual leader just decides all on his or her own. It's something that comes from a lot of sometimes painful and awkward conversations with many different actors.
And you didn't mention about this sort of a diversive Myanmar society based on ethnic identity, right? Mon, Karen, Kareni, Shan, Tang, Khyaye. How we can resolve this colonial heritage of ethnic classification, which lead to ethnic essentialism, right? That's why now we hear a lot more about territorial conflicts, territorial identity. So what is important is also how to bring these different ethnic people to work together, to look for common values that can help to build their own society, but still recognizing ethnic differences, something above ethnic identity, above ethnic nationalism. That's what I see here.
And that's where the role of Burmese academics can be in doing this deeper thought, using academic.
But how can we build this academic generation or intellectual without, because now we don't have universities that can produce this kind of discussion, searching for core values of that society. That's why we are trying to do this for them. If possible, we would like to see, ASEAN would like to see ourselves as a space to bring this intellectual together.
Yeah. And you very much are, and the work you're doing is exemplary. It's why we're having this conversation. However, as you mentioned, there is this challenge that you're an international department that's made up of 80% of Burmese. And so the question does come, who else is carrying this torch? This can't be something that your department and you alone are lifting up.
I cannot do it myself. It's limits. There's a limit in time, it's limit in resources. But we tried the best.
But are there other sectors of Thai society that can also be sharing in this?
I think if you look at the interest of Thai people, Thai intellectual, it's quite amazing that there are quite a number of people are engaging, following what happened in Myanmar.
Absolutely.
I have not met her. Natty, you know that name, the pseudonym?
Natty Loves Myanmar.
Incredible efforts that she has put in. Some Thai scholars have followed Burma issues steady. Several colleagues from Thammasat University, from Kasetsart University, from Chulalongkorn, from Chiang Mai University as well. You find quite a number of people who are following and looking at what kind of development happened in Myanmar. Right? NGO, a lot of Thai NGO also was here. Amazing. If you compare the attention, the effort, and the input from Thai side to Myanmar, it's much more than to, for example, to Cambodia, to Laos. Yeah? It's much more than that. But again, we have not worked together. But again, it's maybe this natural process. You cannot force people to work together. So certain moments, we can work together. So that's what Asedi has been doing. Find certain moments that we can involve some people.
Yeah, you can't force, but you can facilitate, which is what you've been doing. Yeah. So then moving beyond Myanmar, you focus so much of your attention and time on the Myanmar issue, and rightly so, with the post-2021 coup. Looking at the wider role that Thailand and CMU and RCSD is playing in the region, you've also done work in understanding Southeast Asian issues and Southeast Asian identity and themes that are prevalent, and where Myanmar and Myanmar-Thai relations, of course, fits into this. And so, looking at the overall regional issues that are becoming predominant, what is concerning you? What has been taking the focus of the academics and studies and conferences you've been focusing on?
I think, as you can see here, we have this rethinking of ethnic study. I think we need to re-examine the way we look at ethnic group in mainland Southeast Asia. Because if you look at the experience in Vietnam, the ethnic group has very strong power in changing the society. In Myanmar, lots of powerful ethnic groups. But what kind of approach, how can we understand, how can we find new lens to understand their position and their relationship and their contribution to build the new society? Yeah. That's what we would like to start our conversation about that. Second is decolonizing methodology. How can we, how can we recognize the coexistence of different knowledges, not just Western knowledge, but local knowledge together, and how these different knowledges, or what is called multiple knowledges, can be harnessed, can be used in the planning of the economic development in the region. That's what we are trying to do. Yeah. But again, it's not me only. We need a lot of efforts to work on this. We need to work with China as well. We cannot ignore them.
Yeah. Have you been able to work with China?
Yes, with Yunnan University, with young student, MA student, to let them know what happened in this part of the world, of the country.
How has that been?
Well, we need more time to work with them, but at least they can expose to the kinds of problem and the kinds of methodology we are using for that. We took them to visit local communities.
And then on the subject of academic freedom, do you feel that in Thailand there is this opportunity of free academic inquiry and study, really, to whatever ends you want to pursue?
I think there are some limitation to that as well. I think in the case of Thai academic, you should not touch upon the certain issue, or sometimes openly criticize the military. It may not be a recommended issue. I myself was also charged for that when I organized the International Thai Study Conference in 2017. And some of our colleagues were upset by the military intelligence who came to our conference and took pictures, right? So there was some kind of a protest against this intervention. And so our group was charged by the military that I violate the martial law at that time. So we were on trial in the court for a few times.
Oh.
Yeah. But dismissed. Yeah, yeah.
Dismissed. So what you're doing personally and as a department is also not without risk in Thailand.
Yeah, yeah. I was the chairperson of the International Court on Thai Studies and attended by 1,200 people. Huge conference. So as a person who is in charge of it, I was charged for violating the martial laws. You know.
So has that made you more careful in what you do?
Of course.
Well, I thank you so much for having this really informative and long-form discussion about these key topics and your role and what you've been doing here at the RCSD department at CMU and the support that you've been able to provide.
Again, we need more interaction between Thai intellectual and Burmese intellectual, or Myanmar intellectual. Learn from the experience of Thai side on how we can accommodate the coexistence of Myanmar and Thai people. As an intellectual, I think we have to understand the situation as well. There are some problems there, how we can overcome the situation. And at the same time, in terms of how to support Burmese or Myanmar intellectual, the young generation, how to equip them with new methodology of knowledge production. That's what is needed as far as I'm concerned.
Many listeners know that in addition to offering these podcast episodes, we also run a nonprofit, Better Burma, which carries out humanitarian projects across Myanmar. While we regularly post about the current needs and proposals, we also have to handle emergency requests at times, often in matters that are quite literally life or death. When these urgent requests come in, funds are often needed within just hours, so there's no time really to conduct targeted fundraisers. For these situations, we try and maintain an emergency fund. So please consider specifically helping us to maintain this emergency fund. We want to stress that a donation of literally any amount allows us to respond more flexibly and effectively when disaster strikes. Discover how to donate at betterburma.org/donation.
Yarananda, Yarananga, 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 Yarananga,